This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Across Australia, on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community radio stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9.
Hello, darlings. This is Miriam Margins, and you are tuned to Word for Word on Joy 94.9.
My guest is quite simply the finest character actress there is on the planet. From the silver screen to the small screen, her credits are too numerous to mention. But it is her first love, the stage, that sees her return to our shores. Starring in her own multi-award-winning one-woman show, Dickens Women, it is my great pleasure to welcome Miriam Margolyes. Welcome.
What a lovely introduction. My goodness, I don't know if I merit all that.
Oh, you do indeed. Now, you do love Australia and you're back again. This is the second time round for Dickens Women?
Yes, it is. And it may be the last time. I think now it's quite a tiring show and I'm getting on and I think perhaps I'll, you know, pop my clogs.
Well, you say it's a tiring show, but you deliberately kicked off this world tour because you're going on to do a world tour with it, with a recharge in India. Tell us a little bit about that extraordinary experience.
Oh, it was wonderful. Yes, I decided that I needed to be absolutely in tip-top shape. Shape, perhaps, is the wrong word, but in tip-top state, perhaps I should say. So I followed the advice of a friend and I went to Jaipur to an Ayurvedic clinic there called the Chakrapani Clinic. And I was there for 6 weeks. I had daily oil enemas.
Lovely.
It was. It's amazing. My shit didn't stink. It was just extraordinary. And
did you have that thing that drips on your head?
Yes, I did. Yes. I don't remember the Hindi name for it, but the first time I thought, oh, it's torture, I can't stand this. And then suddenly it became incredibly relaxing. And I slept very well. And every time I had that treatment, I slept well.
And you did this for 6 weeks?
Yeah.
Gosh.
And I've become a vegetarian.
Wow.
I eat fish. I don't eat meat and I don't eat poultry and I don't eat cheese.
That's a tremendous transition to be doing later in life.
Oh, darling, it's changed my life. I'm a completely different person.
I bet. New vitality?
Yes, I think there is a new vitality. And I wouldn't be able to do this show if I didn't have really a lot of stamina. And it's given me increased stamina, I think.
Now, it's 200 years since Charles Dickens was born. And this particular Dickens Women you wrote with a colleague.
With Sonia Fraser, my director.
Ago.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, it's an old show. We're all old bell birds now. But it has stood the test of time, as has Mr. Dickens.
Indeed. What keeps it fresh for you?
I don't know. I think it's just bloody good. And the audiences enjoy it. And they're delight and their response is so infectious that it fuels me.
Dickens was, you've described him previously as being a driven yet somewhat troubled man. Why do you say that?
I say it because it's true, but I say it because learning about him, I realised that he was a damaged man. He had a tough childhood and it left its scars, as childhood always does. And out of those scars, he fashioned the most incredible work. He was a genius. I put him alongside Shakespeare. For me, those are the two pillars of English literature.
Dickens was troubled with his relationship with his mother, was he not? What, can you explain that for me?
I'm not going to explain anything for you, darling. Because, first of all, that's what the show does.
Right.
And if I tell you on the radio, no one is going to buy any tickets. Now, I'm not sure that they're going to be able to get any tickets because it's selling out rather well.
Indeed, your Melbourne season has sold out and you've got shows in regional Victoria, which we'll get to a little later. But I guess what I was trying to get at is that it was that relationship really that formed what he did with other women that then formed how he wrote about them.
I think for all of us, our relationship with our mother is primary. It is the relationship on which we fashion all other relationships. And his relationship was not good with his mother. And as a result, not necessarily, but as it happened, his relations with women were not good. Not all of them, but most of them. The women that he didn't sleep with, he got on very well with. But as soon as there was a romantic or sexual element, things went badly wrong.
Miriam Margolyes is my special guest. You are listening to Word for Word. I'm Dean Beck. Your own relationship with your mother was a very special one, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. I was blessed with having golden parents. They were absolutely wonderful to me. And I felt that their love and care and tenderness have stood me in good stead for the rest of my life because they made me feel that I was loved. And I think that's the most important thing. A child needs love. And I felt that I was loved. I was probably spoilt, but I was disciplined by my parents, not slapped about, but made clear how to behave. And they gave me a structure for the rest of my life. And I've been very lucky. I've had good relations in my life. It's very rare that I have problems with people.
I heard that your father never wanted you to be a tall poppy, in the Australian vernacular, if you like. It was something that being on the radar was not really what he was on about.
No, my father, I suppose, who was a very good man and a man of great integrity, but he was one of those Jewish people who are a little bit frightened. He didn't want to stand out in a crowd. And that's all I want, is to stand out in a crowd. So he couldn't really understand me. He never did. I was always completely bewildering to him. I know he loved me with all his heart. And whenever he saw me, he called me my angel. And I know that he felt that. But what I was actually about, what I did with my life, he did not understand.
Did they get to experience your success?
My father did. My mother died, alas, too young. She was 69 when she died, and I was desperate to be 70. I wanted very much to live longer than my mother, and I have. So, you know, every year's a bonus now.
You stated once that you regretted coming out to your mother. It's something that in this day and age for our gay and lesbian community and on this radio station, as a gay and lesbian station, we focus on the importance of coming out for the individual. I wonder why it is that you regretted coming out to your mum.
I'm well aware that my view is not the general view, and it's not a popular view with most of my gay brothers and sisters, and I do believe that I am part of the gay family. But I feel that it's very important not to cause pain in life to people, that one should give pleasure and happiness and security and reassurance to people and not cause them pain. And when I came out to my mother, I caused her pain, severe pain, and I think that that was wrong. It's very much nicer for those of us who are gay to come out. It's like a great burden being lifted from us. We're out, we're free, we're liberated, everybody knows, no secrets, easy. And that's fine for us, but it's not always like that for the people who love us, our parents and spouses or whatever. And so that's why I say that. I know that it's not popular. I'm sorry. That's my view. I don't think it's done for selfish reasons. And I think that society does oppress us and we are right to resist that oppression. But I think when it's a case of the people closest to us, whom we love, we need to be careful.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, you're listening to Word for Word. Dean Beck with you. My very special guest is Miriam Margolese. I'm careful in saying this, but...
Oh, don't be careful.
You have an interesting...
Let it hang out.
You have an interesting fascination in pedophilia or pederasts. I guess it's what goes on in that mind. And it's something that Dickens wrote about in his characters. And it's something I've heard you comment on previously.
Yes, I'm slightly taken aback to say that... to hear you say that I have a fascination about them. I'm concerned about paedophiles. I didn't really know very much about them until I gave a talk in prison, in Wandsworth Prison in London, and my audience was almost entirely paedophiles.
Right.
I realised afterwards that that was because most of them were rather educated, and most of the uneducated prisoners thought, Dickens, I'll give over. You know, I don't want to go and listen
to
that.
So they were attracted to...
They were attracted to, you know, somebody coming to talk about something they knew about.
Sure.
And they were all absolutely delightful, very cultivated and respectable people on the surface. But nobody can applaud paedophilia.
Absolutely.
I'm disturbed by it because it hurts kids and that's not good. And... I feel sorry for people who can't get their jollies any other way than by going for kids. That, to me, is a tragedy. I don't know very much about it, and I don't have any close friends who are paedophiles. But it's a vexed and difficult subject, and we mustn't rush to judgment.
And I think the more it's the conversation is suppressed, the more it kind of perpetuates in some ways too.
Yes, I suppose so. I remember when I was going around with a group called Gay Yids years and years ago in London, giving talks to synagogues so that they didn't shy away in horror when somebody said they were gay. And one man in the coffee break came up to me and said, I want to tell you my own problem. It's not that I'm gay, but I can't have an orgasm unless the girl is being sick. Now, I'd never come across that particular problem before, and I've never forgotten it because it seemed to me so damaged, so disturbing, and really abnormal. I felt completely normal after that.
In this life, one thing counts. In the bank, large amounts. I'm afraid these don't grow on trees. You got to pick a pocket or two. You got to pick a pocket or two, boys.
Hello, this is Miriam Margolese, and you are listening to Joy 94.9.
You had an experience in New York about a painting that I'd love you to share with us.
Ah, this would be Gertrude Stein. Many years ago, I came to Australia with a play called Gertrude Stein and a Companion. It's about Alice B. Toklas and Gertrude Stein, two very famous lesbians who lived together for 40 years and were adorable. Very complicated and peculiar in a way because they were living under the Nazis in southern France and under the Vichy regime. But I wanted to see the Picasso portrait of Gertrude Stein. And I went to the Metropolitan Museum, specially. I went over to America when I was preparing for the role of Gertrude Stein. And the curator, well, not the person on the door, you know, the commissioner, I said, you know, I want to come to see the Gertrude Stein, which gallery is it? And she said, oh, I'm very sorry, ma'am, that portrait is not available. It's not open. You know, that gallery is closed. They're going to renew it. So I'm afraid you can't see that. I said, but that's impossible. I must see it. I'm an actress. I'm playing the role. You know? He said, yeah, well, I'm very sorry. You know, I'm pity you came all that way, but it's not available. And I stopped from screaming and throwing a tantrum. And I said, please could you fetch the curator for me to speak to me?
Of the museum?
Of the museum.
Wow.
Well, I think of the art section of it, you know. And so he said, the curator, are you sure? I said, yes, please. He said, okay. So after a while, this lady came down and I explained the situation. And I said, look, I know that this is out of order, but I've come across the Atlantic for this portrait. And I know how important it is. It's an iconic vision of Gertrude Stein. You must let me see it. And she said, oh, my goodness. Well, she said, I can let you in, but, I mean, this is terribly against the rules. Nobody else can come in, you know. And please don't tell anybody about this. I said, I won't tell a soul, but please, please let me see her. And so she took me through the galleries and to where this portrait, and it was hanging on a wall. I'm not even sure that it was hanging, because I've seen it several times now, but I think it was just propped up against the wall.
In storage, almost.
In storage, right. While the gallery was being refurbished. Mm. And I walked towards it from quite a long way away, and I could see her. And I just cried. It was just an amazing thing. And that particular portrait was painted by Picasso in 1904. And when Gertrude Stein died in 1946, Alice Toklas rang Picasso, who was in Paris, and she said, tomorrow the Metropolitan Museum is coming to take that portrait away, your portrait of Gertrude. Would you like to come and say goodbye to it? And so he came round to the studio where they were, the flat, the famous flat in Paris, and he stood and he looked at that portrait that he'd painted 40-some years ago, and he saluted it.
A physical action to
yes.
an inanimate object.
Yes.
How extraordinary.
And I think he was saying goodbye to something that he knew was one of his greatest works.
Seeing that picture, how did it transform your portrayal of the role?
It helped me in an obvious way because of the posture that she had when she was being painted, so that I was able to use that posture in my characterization. But I think there was something very noble and lion-like about her head. And I've got a lot of hair, but I had to more or less shave it off to play Gertrude. In some ways, I'm quite glad I didn't have to play her again, because it was rather a difficult thing to say goodbye to my hair. But it helped me to establish that nobility of character that I think she had. I'm very fond of Gertrude Stein.
Equally fond of Dickens and his women, you have said that your characterization of those Dickens characters comes solely out of the text.
Yes, it does. That is correct. I think that when you're an actress, all you should be doing is reading the text again and again and again and trying to work out who is that person and what are the thoughts that she's thinking.
And sometimes with Dickens, it's a little easier because the spelling is phonetic and you can sort of get your tongue around how that person might have sounded.
Exactly.
Other times, you have to invent that from your understanding of the text.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. I couldn't have put it better. I don't analyse when I'm reading Dickens how I'm going to do it. I don't work like that. It just shoots out at me. And I just feel at home with the character. So that Mrs. Gamp, who is one sort of drunken cockney, you know, she's all like that, and her diction's not very clear, so she says, disposed. When I'm so disposed, and according to the best of my ability, she's... that is clear, because he spells it with a G, disposed. But then when it's Miss Moucher, who is the dwarf hairdresser that I do, based on a real person that Dickens knew because she'd been a hairdresser or a chiropodist for his wife, that's a different sound. And she says, oh, my flower! You know, there's a sort of excitement there. She's not drunk. She's right on the ball, you know. And that...
Sharp as a tack. You are absorbed by your characters. You are almost possessed or channel them. How do you compartmentalise them so they don't sometimes morph or cross over?
Crikey, I don't know. I think you just concentrate. You throw yourself into it because there isn't any other way to do it. And when I'm doing a lot one after the other, I'm just totally involved. I do a lesbian character, Miss Wade from Little Dorrit, and I do that straight after Miss Moucher, who's the dwarf that I just did then. But there's no different. There's no... How do you say? I don't go into a different mode. I'm just... First I'm Miss Moucher, and then I'm Miss Wade. I don't see... There isn't a bridge from one to the other. It's just bang, bang. That's it. I don't know any other way to do it.
A recent review from Melbourne's Age gave you a 5 stars and said that...
Oh, no, I don't want to know what they said.
No, I just
wanted...
Don't tell me what they said. No, no, no.
Because I never listen to reviews.
Simply said that you looked possessed. and it comes through when you're on screen as well. You are... Like us, almost channeling.
But I think that that's what our job is as actors. We have to become another person. People don't come to see Miriam Margolyes. They want to see Miriam Margolyes doing a person, another person, I think. And that's the job. So that's what I do. And I'm very glad if the gentleman in the Age thought that I
was possessed.
Was doing that. Yeah, that's good. I like that.
On the Community Radio Network, this is Word for Word. I'm Dean Beck. Today's special guest, the one and only Miriam Margolyes. Is it easier in some ways to do the voice characters for cartoons? And you've done Happy Feet and you've done all sorts of characters that you're not on screen, you're behind a microphone.
Whether I'm behind or in front of a camera or a microphone or an audience, I act exactly the same. I put my whole body, face, everything into it. There's no difference. People say, you know, do you act differently for the cinema? No, I don't. Because I'm a person, I'm changing into another person, and that doesn't make any difference what the medium is, you just do it. I love doing voice work. I love the detail of it.
But you did a lot of radio characters for a long time.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I started in radio with the BBC. And I love doing that. And I did Babe, and I've done lots of audio books. I've got one out at the moment called Dr. Proctor. There's a sort of series of children's books. And I love it.
Most recently, we have seen you on our screens in Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries on the ABC. And we've only seen a couple of episodes so far. It looks extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. It is a wonderful series. I congratulate the BBC. Oh, no, it's not the BBC,
it's
is it? It's
our
the ABC.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I have to remember that because it's as good as what the BBC does. And I think it's exactly what there should be on Australian television. There should be Australian content. This is set in Melbourne in 1927 with Australian actors, notably the brilliant, amazing Essie Davis, who is quite extraordinary. And that's what there should be on television. You've got far too many American stuff and British stuff, and it's rubbish. You want to have your own stuff on and foster Australian talent, which is wonderful.
A little birdie tells me an outfit that you wore in that had original lace from a tablecloth.
Yes, I believe that's true. Well, Marion, who is our designer, who is one of the most gifted women I have ever come across, she is extraordinary. And a lot of the success of Phryne Fisher, well, you call it Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. They keep changing the name, but anyway, Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries is due to those costumes. They are extraordinary.
And I believe the role was written for you, is that right?
Yes, it was, because she's not a character that comes in Kerry Greenwood's.
The aunt, yes. Yeah.
But they thought of me, thank goodness, and asked me if I was able to do it, and I longed to do it. And I hope they'll do another series and I'll do it again.
Miriam Margolyes stars in Dickens' Women. Frankston, March 6 to 7. Geelong, March 9 to 10. And Ballarat, March 13. Before going around Australia and then the world. Miriam Margolyes, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was lovely. Thank you so much.
There'll be a podcast of this interview available for download from Joy's website, joy.org.au. If you would like to correspond with the program, please send us an email, wordforword@joy.org.au. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it's @DeanBeckOnAir. Thank you very much for joining us today. You keep well. Till next time, take care. Bye for now.
Word for Word is produced by Robert Brierley and presented by Dean Beck from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9. Word for Word is made possible thanks to funding provided by the Community Broadcasting Foundation and is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations in the Community Radio Network.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.